What? What are you? And then he saw, as he so frequently did, what she was thinking. Padme. He breathed. You can't be serious. Of course I'm serious, she said. It might not work. We might not even need to do it, if you're right and Yularen can liberate Lanteeb with 3 ships. But if he can't, then I say we have to try. Bale was shaking his head. Padme, you're crazy. Raise our own fleet? Why not? It isn't illegal. No, but it's highly unorthodox, he retorted. Besides, it'll never work. The sheer time it'd take to get a special Senate session convened, to get consensus and waivers and... Who said anything about going through official channels? She asked. That would bog us down in a bureaucratic morass. No, we'll have to work back channels on this one, Bale. We'll have to pull every last string we can lay our hands on. Call in all our favors and put ourselves deeply into debt. But after Chandra-La, I can't believe we won't find a few people to help us. Out of self-preservation, if nothing else. Bale slumped against the transparasteel window. What about Palpatine? He stays in the dark, she said promptly. Even mentioning the idea to him would ruin any hope for plausible deniability, and it'd put him in an untenable position. No, we leave the Supreme Chancellor out of it, and we don't approach anyone as senators or members of the Security Committee either. At least, not unless we absolutely have to. He was almost laughing. Then how do you expect to convince a single government to supply us with so much as 1 armed ship to help liberate Lanteeb? I'm not only thinking of governments, she said. Off the top of my head, I can name 5 private corporations with their own fleets of armed escort ships. 5 companies that stand to lose millions if the threat of this bioweapon isn't eliminated. You think they won't agree if it means saving that kind of money? Well, probably they would, yes, but... Bale raked his fingers through his short hair. Padme, what kind of a message will that send? We can say we're not acting as senators, but unless we resign, we are senators, and... I honestly couldn't care less about political messages, she snapped. Not when billions of lives are on the line. But if we have to have a message, then how about this? It's past time we stopped looking to the Senate to solve all our problems. We're in this mess partly because we've surrendered our consciences and our independence to an endless parade of self-serving government committees. We need action, not more talking, and we have a duty, a moral obligation, to keep one another safe. To look out for the weakest and most helpless among us. This republic belongs to everyone, and we all have to do what we can to preserve it. Stang, Padme, Bale sighed. Look, I'm not saying you're wrong, but I'm not sure you grasp the enormity of what you're suggesting. Believe me, I do, she said. But I'm not going to let it intimidate me. This is too important. Bail Organa, next to me, you're the most persuasive person I know. You're high profile, you're respected, and you know people who know people who know people, from the highest to the lowest levels of government and private enterprise on every planet that matters in the Republic. And I've made a few interesting connections myself in the last few years. Between us, we can do this. We can put together a civilian fleet to back up Yularen's battle group if they need it. Shaking his head again, Bale returned to his chair. I must be coming down with something, because I'm starting to believe you. Are you quite certain you're not a Jedi playing mind tricks? She laughed. Don't be silly. I'm just a woman who doesn't like taking no for an answer. All right, he thought for a moment. Let's say for the sake of argument I agree with this mad plan. When do you suggest we start making overtures? According to the chrono on his desk, it was nearly midnight. He was exhausted and so was she. As soon as possible, she said, in and around whatever meetings and briefings and Senate sessions that get called. Be at my apartment no later than 0700 tomorrow, and over breakfast we can draw up a preliminary list of preferred first-round contacts. Once that's done, we'll split the names and get started. You're serious, aren't you? He said, wondering. You really think we can do this? Abruptly, her adrenaline rush faded, leaving her shaky and all too aware of the stakes. I think we have to try, she said, and heard the break in her voice. For the people who died today.
For the people who'll die if we don't stop Lock Dirt. For Anakin and Obi-Wan. Because we have to get them back, Bail. We can't leave them to rot on that planet.
Somber, he looked at her. No, we can't. And then he smiled, rueful and resigned and warmly affectionate. So it's Padme to the rescue again. I'm starting to think this Republic will fall apart without you. There was an electropen on his desk. She threw it at him.
Huh. Now let's get out of here, shall we? We've got an early start and a lot of work to do.
Ahsoka stared at Master Yoda, her heart thudding.
Just me, Master? But what about Master Damson? I've got some experience now, but I'm still only a Padawan.
Master Yoda tapped his gimmer stick to the Jedi Council chamber floor. It seemed extra large and echoey with only the two of them in it.
Duties elsewhere does Master Damson have, Padawan. With her fate concerned, you should not be. Your business, her doings are not.
He probably meant Taria wasn't well enough to join the battle group. She should have realized that. Chastened, she dropped her gaze.
Yes, Master. Sorry.
Alone to Lanteeb with the battle group, you will travel, Padawan, said Yoda. Join you there, at least one Jedi Master will. Together, you will lead the clones, if foolish the Separatists are, and refuse to surrender control of the planet they do.
Ahsoka nodded.
Yes, Master. Master, do you know who...
Decided yet, that is not, said Yoda. Matter to you, it should not, Padawan.
Blast. Nothing she said was coming out the way she meant it. Or could it be that Yoda was worried? She didn't dare try to read him, but just looking at him, hearing the thread of tension in his voice.
He is worried. I know he is. There's so much at stake, and Sky Guy and Master Kenobi are still missing.
Padawan, said Yoda, his voice gentler. Good reports of you have I had. Your leadership in the new dojo team challenges. Impressive, that is. Ready you are for greater responsibilities.
He knew about that?
She and Taria had held another 18 challenges since the first one that they'd held on a whim. Now there was a waiting list of younglings who wanted to take part. They'd had to go on rotation. She'd even held a couple of training sessions by herself, passing on what she'd learned the hard way on the war's front line.
And Master Yoda knew? Well, of course he knows. Master Yoda knows everything.
Master, I'm honored you think I'm doing good work. But do you really think I'm ready?
Commendable your humility is, Padawan, said Yoda, his fathomless eyes warm. Ask to do more than you can do, you will not be. To the GAR barracks you should go now. A troop carrier to Indomitable soon will take you and Torrent Company. To Admiral Yularen you will listen, Padawan, until join you a Jedi Master does.
Ahsoka nodded vigorously.
Yes, Master Yoda. Thank you, Master. I won't let you down.
Know that I do, Padawan. Dismissed you are.
So she was going to Lanteeb to liberate the planet and thwart Lock Dird and rescue Sky Guy and Master Kenobi. All in a day's work. Maybe a day and a half. She couldn't leave the temple without bidding Taria a swift farewell. She found the Jedi Master in the Arboretum, working through some meditation in movement exercises.
Ahsoka,
said Taria without opening her eyes. She was dressed in one of her customary dark bodysuits, and for once, her long hair was unbraided, spreading in a bluish-green shimmer down her back. She stood poised on her left leg, the right pulled up behind her with both hands wrapped around her ankle, the flat of her foot resting softly against her head. Her breathing was deep and slow, no strain in her at all.
You're leaving. One of these days, I'll be able to read the Force that easily.
Yes, for Lanteeb. Taria opened her eyes. A golden glow shone in their tawny depths.
Not alone, though.
With a battle group. It's not common knowledge, Taria.
In other words, said Taria, grinning, I should keep my mouth shut.
She released her right ankle, then bent herself in half, palms pressed flat to the grass. Her hair pooled and puddled before her like a summer lake.
Don't worry, I won't breathe a word.
I'm sorry to leave you with the team challenge unfinished. Taria wrapped her arms around her calves and pressed her hidden face to her knees. No, you're not. You're going to rescue your Sky Guy and Obi-Wan. You're thrilled, Ahsoka Tano. Don't try to deny it. Yes, she was thrilled. But she felt guilty, too, because Taria cared as much as she did. I wish you were coming, she said. They're sending a master to join me. I don't know who, but I wish it was you. Supple as growing green tappy wheat, Taria straightened. So do I, Ahsoka. But my feet tread a different path. Go to Lanteeb. Pluck our friends from danger. And perhaps we'll continue our team challenges when you return. I want to give you the chance to draw even. When I return, Sky Guy and I will be sent back to the war, and you'll still be stuck here. But she didn't say that aloud. There wasn't any point. I'd like that very much, he said. Taria, I'm sorry, I have to go. Be well, won't you? I'll do my best, said Taria. And you stay safe. Always, she said, and managed a small, trembling smile. May the Force be with you, Master Damson. And with you, Padawan Tano. Taria wiggled her fingers. Now shoo. It hurt to leave her. In such a short time, Taria Damson had become a good friend. But so was Anakin, her friend, and right now, he needed her.
Littlen, Rex greeted her at the 501st's GAR Complex Barracks. Word's come down. We're shipping out. Are you coming with us, or waving us goodbye?
I'm coming with, she said, and gave the crowded mess hall a hard look. What's the mood, Captain?
He quirked an eyebrow at her.
You can't tell.
Ha ha, she muttered. I'm comparing notes, all right?
Side by side, they took in the huge room. Crowded with clones, the buzzing conversations, the undercurrent of excitement, trepidation, and endurance as they grabbed a quick meal. The 501st was ready. They were always ready. Rex nodded, pleased with his men.
You got a destination for me?
Command didn't tell you?
No, said Rex. Word came down, we're shipping out. That's all. Is it a secret mission?
Not exactly, but it's sensitive. Rex,
Ahsoka looked up at him.
This is for your ears only. We're going after Sky Guy and Master Kenobi.
Rex's scarred face went very still, just one muscle leaping along his tightly held jaw.
Right.
They're in trouble, Rex, trapped behind enemy lines.
Right, he said again, that muscle still leaping. Is anything to do with what happened on Shandrala yesterday?
He was a smart, smart man.
Everything, she said,
her voice nearly a whisper.
They were trying to stop that attack, but...
Best not to say anything more, Littlen,
Rex told her, his voice just as low.
But don't you worry. We won't be leaving them behind enemy lines.
He nodded at the crowded, noisy room.
The boys and me, we'll fight to the last man to get them home again.
His hand on her shoulder was warm and hard, comforting.
Rex, the troop carrier's going to be here soon, 10 minutes.
Then they gear up.
Yes, ma'am, he said, letting his hand drop away. 10 minutes. Excuse me.
She watched him cross to Sergeant Korik, who was sitting with Checkers and Dandy and Flash. Checkers turned, hearing Rex's approach, and nodded, seeing her. One finger touched his forehead in a small, genuine salute. She smiled at him and tried not to dwell on his chin's fresh scar.
They're too easily hurt, all of them. And if this mission turns into a pitched battle, they won't all come home.
So she drank in their faces and their laughter, the jokes and the teasing and their wild, reckless courage. Because this could be the last time for some of them. And she never wanted to forget. One by one, Yoda looked at the holo images of his fellow counselors. He'd never felt so alone in this place he loved, this council chamber that was a home within his larger home of the Jedi Temple. The war had swallowed his colleagues completely. At no other time in his memory had the council been this scattered, its cohesiveness this endangered. It wasn't simply a question of companionship. In weighty matters, the council functioned best when its members shared the same space, the same moment, when the Force could weave its way effortlessly among them and their separate strengths and talents combined to become something greater and more powerful than each of them alone. That was impossible when they were separated by light years, represented only by a coalescence of shallow particles. But even with those limitations, he knew that in this matter, they felt with one heart.
"Then agreed we are,"
he said.
"Insist we must, that leave Kothless, Mace Windu should, to assist with freeing Lanteeb from Count Dooku."
"Indeed,"
said Ki-Adi-Mundi.
"And I am at a loss to understand why Palpatine is so intransigent on the matter. Why will he not be guided by us in this? After Chandra-La, it is plain that Lanteeb has the higher priority."
"So you would think,"
he said.
"But always a politician, Palpatine is."
"You're concerned he seeks to protect his own dignity and entitlements at the expense of innocent life?"
said Adigalia from her ship in the depths of the Aostai region.
"That doesn't seem like him, Yoda."
"Concerned he is that Kothless and Bothawe offended will be by our withdrawal of protection,"
he said.
"To Dooku, he thinks they might turn. If abandoned by us, they consider themselves."
"He's worrying for no reason,"
Mace Windu said flatly.
"Kothless and Bothawe will never leave the Republic. Yoda, he's going to have to accept the Council's decision. I'll leave enough clones here to satisfy the ruling Council's need for security. Tell Yularen that Dagger and I will rendezvous with him at the battle group's pre-approach coordinates."
Soberly, the other counselors nodded their support, then disconnected from the holoconference. In the end, only Mace remained, his image gently flickering.
"You're not happy about this. Do you know something I don't?"
Yoda let his chin sink to his chest.
"Usurped, Palpatine will feel, when told of our decision he is."
"That's too bad. Palpatine's wrong. Dird's our greatest danger now. It's not enough for us to hope that Obi-Wan and young Skywalker can pull off a miracle on Lanteeb. They need our help, or Chandra-La will only be the beginning."
Yoda sighed.
"This I know. But this also I know. A wedge between the Jedi and the Supreme Chancellor will this unfortunate business drive."
"Politicians don't tell the Jedi what to do, Master Yoda. And smart politicians take our advice even if they don't always understand our reasons. That's how it's worked for 1,000 years, and for 1,000 years it's worked just fine. Palpatine should be more worried about offending us than Kothless. We're the ones keeping the Republic together."
And that was true, too, though he wouldn't phrase it quite that way to the Supreme Chancellor.
"Go to see him now, I will. Contact me when approaching your rendezvous with the battle group you are."
"Shall do,"
said Mace, and disconnected their link. Filled with a weary unease, Yoda stared at the cityscape for a moment, then withdrew from the council chamber so he could make his preparations to meet with the Republic's Supreme Chancellor.
"And may the Force be with me. For pleased by this news, he will not be."
Chapter 16. The latest droid bombardment had started just after dawn, and nearly 10 hours later, it showed no sign of stopping. Covered in hydraulic fluids and scattered singe marks, smeared with sweat and dirt and blood, Anakin stood before Torbell's laboring storm shield, raised his fists at Dird's relentless army, and vented fear and fury in one long, soundless scream.
"You stinking barves! You can keep on firing until Lanteeb's sun goes supernova! We are never going to let you in!"
Panting, he turned away from the merciless machines and struggled to recover his precarious balance. It was nearly 5 days since he'd had a decent stretch of sleep or a full meal or anything approaching enough water to drink. The village was on strict rationing. Every single mouthful accounted for. Rickard and Jacqueline had even discussed the slaughter of their poultry and milk cows. It hadn't come to that yet, but it would if help didn't reach them soon. And there'd been no word from the Jedi Temple, no hint of any kind that this wasn't a battle they were fighting on their own. Every time he looked up, it seemed, another shipment of ammunition was arriving for the droids to pour against Torbell's flimsy shield. Since the start of the siege, their number had swelled from 300 units to more than 400. There were no sentient soldiers in this army. Dird wasn't risking a single man. The Barv didn't have to. He could sit in his compound and watch his assault via holoremote, surrounded by luxury, convinced the victory was already his.
Lightheaded with weariness, Anakin shoved his microspanner back into his tool belt. And maybe it is. Was I wrong to push us into this? Have I condemned every last one of us to a swift and brutal slaughter? Or will we die of starvation and sickness first? He'd never felt so afraid in his life. Every waking moment was spent slaving over the power plant and the storm shield generators, checking and rechecking the shield's perimeter, hatching and tinkering and pulling miracles out of thin air to keep the old and overworked equipment from disintegrating into smoking slag. His modifications had worked, but the price was ferocious. They were burning through the stockpiled liquid damatite so quickly, burning through circuitry and wiring and stripped out spare parts just as fast. And everyone was looking to him for the answers, expecting him to keep the miracle going. I don't know how much longer I can keep on doing this. The day was dying, the last of the light draining out of the sky. But that didn't matter. The constant barrage of plasma and blaster fire hitting the shield turned night to day. It was as bright here after sundown as it was on Coruscant. The thought of home pierced his guts, a sharp shiv of memory. By now, Padme had to know that he and Obi-Wan were trapped on this mess of a planet. Yoda would have told Bail Organa, and Organa would certainly tell her, or she'd rip the news out of him. She had to be sick with terror for him. A couple of times, he'd risked trying to feel her in the Force, tried to see where she was, how she was, but he was simply too tired. All his strength was being poured into keeping Tor-Bel and its people alive. He had nothing left. Nothing to give her. Oh, my dearest love, can you forgive me for putting you through this? I'll make it up to you, I promise, when I come home. Blat, blat, boom, blat, boom, boom, boom. The storm shield couldn't muffle all the bombardment's noise. The constant dull impacts hammered at everyone trapped in the village, keeping headaches simmering just below the surface. Tempers were short, fights erupting at the least provocation. Ricard and Jacqueline had confiscated every last weapon and anything that could be used as a weapon if it wasn't needed to keep them alive. Tiba Sufi didn't need any more casualties. She had enough on her plate with the sick house full and the charter house turned into a second ward. His jaw clenched tight. Anakin watched the blooms and blossoms of superheated blaster plasma drip down the storm shield. Surely the Seps had to run out of ammunition soon. A crackle in his pocket. Then Devi's faint voice sounded over his comlink.
Anakin, do you copy?
He pulled out the comlink and thumbed the transmit switch. What's up?
Where are you?
He was so tired he had to think about it. I've just checked Generator 10. Why?
I need help here.
Can't you ask Ricard? I've still got...
Ricard's dropped. He's green sick. I'm on my own, and I've got a blocked fuel valve. I'll have a red needle in minutes.
Stang. She sounded desperate. And if he lost Devi? Fine, he said, eyes closed, head pounding. I'll be right there. With a final look at the droids, he started back toward the plant. Devi, can you calm Tarnik? Get him to check the other generators? They should be holding, but...
I've tried. I can't raise him.
Then try again. Debbie, the generators have to be kept under constant surveillance. If even one fails...
I know,
Debbie shouted back.
I'll try. You just get here. Hurry.
Shoving the comlink into his pocket, he broke into a shuffling jog, which was the closest he could come to running right now. The light was fading faster. Lanteeb's sun lost behind the hills that stood between the village and the open country. If the droids would only stop firing... He'd be able to see the night sky's first faint stars. I don't care if I never see stars again as long as I live. Please, please let that shield hold. Anakin jogged past the silenced mine and the burned-out hulk of the refinery, still stinking, past the ground car graveyard and onto the plant. There, he unstuck the blocked fuel valve, coaxed another 8 valves into running a little more smoothly, answered a spate of questions from Tarnik, who'd been grumpily roused from sleep, helped Devi recalibrate the 4 main shield monitors, and then, last of all, double-checked the plant's fuel gauge for accuracy.
So, I'm not imagining things, said Devi, seeing his dismay. Our usage has gone up another 2%.
He tried hard to sound confident.
They have to start running low on ammunition soon. It'll get better, don't worry.
If you say so, she said wearily. Anakin.
He knew what she was going to ask. The same question was in the eyes of every villager he came across.
Soon, Devi. I don't know exactly, but they'll be here soon. I can't tell if you believe that, she said after a moment. Or if you only want to believe it, or if you're lying because you don't know what else to say.
I'm not lying, he snapped. Help is coming. We just have to hold on a little longer, that's all. She turned away, the servos on her anti-grav harness grinding like broken bones. In silence, they listened to the monotonous thud of blaster fire against the shield.
I am holding on, Anakin, she said at last. As hard as I can. We all are. But
I know, he said, almost whispering. I'm sorry, Devi. Let me look at your harness. The servos have slipped.
Fine, she said, listless. If you want to, I don't care.
So he fixed her harness, knowing that by morning the servos would have slipped again, worse than ever.
Will you be all right here on your own for a little while longer?
He said, tossing the mini Hydra spanner back into the plant toolkit. I want to check on Obi-Wan, make sure he's not overdoing things. She shrugged.
Sure, I'll calm you if there's another crisis.
When there was another crisis.
The problem was that aside from him and Obi-Wan, there wasn't anyone to relieve her.
Not now, with Ricard dropped greensick. Anakin pressed his flesh and blood hand to her shoulder.
I'll come back as soon as I can. No, she said, shaking her head. Anakin, you need to rest. Take an hour, take two. If you go down, greensick, if you go down for any reason, then it's over for us. You do understand that, don't you? Without you, we die.
Struck dumb, he stared at her. Without you, we die. She was right. He knew she was right. But he'd never wanted to hear it said aloud.
I'm sorry, she said, and stood on unsteady tiptoe to kiss his cheek.
No hint of flirting from her anymore, just a warm, sisterly affection.
I didn't mean to make things harder. I'll see you later. Don't forget to eat.
On his way to the village center, he met up with Tarnik, and they compared notes. So far, so good still. The generators were holding. The old man promised to keep on doing rounds a while longer.
Get a bite and some shut-eye, boy, he said. We need you.
And if one more person reminded him... He didn't need to use the Force to find Obi-Wan. When his former master wasn't in the power plant, he was in the sick house, trying to ease the load on Tipa Sufi. Thanks to the toxic smoke from the burned refinery, more than half the people of Tor-Bel were suffering green sickness, even though they'd had a lifetime of swallowing their secret pill. Thanks to the Force, he and Obi-Wan were managing to avoid the malady. He didn't know whether to feel grateful or guilty for that. Standing unnoticed in the sick house's open doorway, he took one look at Obi-Wan's face and cursed under his breath.
You fool! What are you doing?
Tiba Sufi glanced up from straightening one patient's blanket, saw him, and frowned. Then she looked over at Obi-Wan, who was seated beside a burdened cot, oblivious to everything save the suffering man he was trying to help. Lips pursed, Sufi picked her way between the other cots to the door.
Anakin,
she said, pressing one hand to his forehead. It was her habit to test him for fever every time they met. He was used to it now.
Take your friend out of here. Get him into what passes for fresh air in Tor-Bel these days. I don't want to see him again till morning. But since I know that won't happen, keep him away for at least an hour.
Nodding, Anakin looked again at the score of sickened villagers.
I'll do my best, Tiba. Is Ricard here?
You heard?
With a sigh, Sufi gestured to the crowded room's far corner.
I've put him with Arad. Thanks to Obi-Wan, the boy's making progress. I think it does Ricard good to hear his son's voice. If he can hear anything. He's gone down hard.
How soon before you run out of your home remedy?
A day or two, she said heavily. I stripped the herb field bare this afternoon. The last of it's brewing now out back. I'm diluting it and portioning it into half measures. If I have to,
I'll drop that to quarter doses, but what good it'll do us then, who can say?
Frowning again, she nodded at Obi-Wan.
I think he's doing us more good than the potion, but he's not going to last much longer than my herbs, not even with Gretty helping him, though I've put a stop to her for now. So, you talk some sense into that man, Anakin. He'll not listen to me.
I can't guarantee he'll listen to me either, he said. He's pretty stubborn, Sufi. Thin arms folded, she pulled a wry face.
I'd noticed. Must be something they look for when they are choosing Jedi.
And then she hesitated. Her smock dress was baggy on her, draped in wrinkles and folds. She'd lost weight since the first time he saw her.
Anakin.
And here we go again. He touched her hand, seeking to comfort. Sufi, I've been fighting on the front lines since the war began, and if I've learned anything, it's that a battle can turn from loss to won in a heartbeat. But if you give up before the end, if you accept defeat as inevitable, you'll never live to see victory. She sucked in her cheeks, staring at all her sick friends and neighbors.
I hope you're right. Now go away, and take your friend with you.
Yes, Teba, he said, and left her to brood. So exhausted was Obi-Wan coming out of his healing trance that he didn't even realize a Jedi was standing practically on top of him. Anakin waited a minute, then risked taking hold of his shoulder.
Obi-Wan.
Obi-Wan. Come on, let's go. Startled, Obi-Wan looked up.
Anakin, the power plant? The shield generators?
He dropped to a crouch. They're holding, don't worry. Come on. Sufi wants you out of here for a while.
Anakin?
Obi-Wan frowned.
You look dreadful.
You think so? Then do yourself a favor, Obi-Wan. Don't go near a mirror.
Me? I'm fine, Obi-Wan said vaguely. But you should get some rest. And when was the last time you ate?
Hooking a hand under Obi-Wan's elbow, Anakin got them both on their feet. Don't remember, but if you want to nag me about it, you'll have to do it outside. In a minute, said Obi-Wan, and looked down at his green sick patient.
I just need to...
No, you don't, he insisted. You're relieved of duty, Master Kenobi, and that's an order from General Sufi. On the other side of the sick room, as though she'd heard her name mentioned, Sufi turned, caught Obi-Wan's eye, and pointed silently at the open door. Her severe expression was like a shouted command. Oh, said Obi-Wan. Right, I see. Outside the sick house, the fast-falling night was strobed with brilliant flashes of blaster fire, and the cool air shivered from the constant concussions. Standing on the front step, Obi-Wan stared across the village to the distant shield still holding, still protecting them.
How long before it fails?
He asked, very quietly, so the villagers gathered on the square nearby wouldn't hear him.
I don't know.
Anakin shoved his hands into his pockets.
You going to say I told you so?
I'm too tired, said Obi-Wan.
Come on, let's eat.
With the village's food and water supplies so perilously low, Jacqueline and Ricard had declared that all meals would be cooked and served from a central location. A makeshift kitchen had been set up on the square, and teams of people cooked and cleaned there from dawn till dusk each day. Tables and chairs had been hauled out of the cottages and arranged in a large outside dining area. With nearly all of Torbell's power being diverted to the shields, the food was cooked over open pits and the dining section lit with burning torches. Under different circumstances, it might have felt festive. This early, most of the diners were children. A few adults sat with them, helping the youngest and keeping order among the rest. Gazes lifted from plates, watching the Jedi make their way to the serving area. Anakin felt fear, bewilderment, uncertainty, hope. A tangle of raw emotion in each unblinking stare. He could easily have staggered beneath the weight of their regard.
Should I have sided with Obi-Wan and surrendered? Have I condemned all these younglings to death?
There was no point in having second thoughts, because there was no going back. Still, he couldn't help it. Every frightened face, every caught breath and tear reproached him. There was still no sign of the droid's bombardment easing. Blat, blat, boom, blat, boom, boom, boom.
Don't listen to it,
said Obi-Wan as they reached the serving area. Don't think about it. We are where we are, Anakin. Best to focus on what we can do next, not what we've already done and can't change. That's easy for you to say, he muttered. But I...
Teebs?
Jacqueline greeted them, looking up from her meager scramble of eggs. Like everyone in the village, she was dirty and tired.
You want feeding?
Jacqueline, said Obi-Wan, and reached across the bench to take her wrist between his fingers. How are you? Any sign of green sickness? She pulled her wrist from his grasp.
No. Any sign of the help you promised?
So bitter she was, having been overruled by her fellow villagers, by Ricard's blind faith and his sense of obligation. She resented every sacrifice Torbell was making because they hadn't given themselves up. Resented them for the 9 funeral cremations the day after the droid's attack. Resented them most of all for Branda, her murdered friend. Not yet, but soon, I hope, said Obi-Wan, refusing to be baited. Jacqueline, you must come to the sick house if you start to feel unwell.
I'm fine,
she snapped, slopping eggs and a miserly portion of wilted green stuff onto a plate.
How's Ricard?
Obi-Wan took the plate she shoved at him, and then a chipped cup with its mean ration of water. Like Arad, he's holding his own. Not dying? She partly filled a second plate, her chin trembling.
Word was he'd likely not make it to sunrise.
Anakin took his plate from her.
Don't let yourself get caught up in rumor, Teeba. If Obi-Wan says Arad's not dying, then he's not.
She shoved her serving spoon back into the sloppy mess of scrambled eggs, poured him some water, and thrust the cup in his face.
And why should I believe one word out of your mouths, with us trapped here like beetles, waiting to be squashed?
The other two women working service with her slowed their cleaning to listen. Anakin opened his mouth to answer hotly, tired of her hostility, but Obi-Wan nudged him silent.
We understand your anger, Jacqueline, he said, his voice cracked with weariness and strain. Nothing has worked out the way we wanted it to.
Her eyes were dulled by too much fear and not enough sleep.
How much longer?
Her voice was a fierce whisper.
You said if it came to it, you'd hand yourselves over. How much longer must we suffer before you do the right thing?
Jacqueline,
I'm the only leader now. With Ricard Greensick, the weight bears down on me. And I give you, Jedi, fair warning. If the help you promised isn't here within a day, then I'll see you'll make good on your word. You'll give yourselves up.
Teeba, said Obi-Wan, we hear you. As they retreated to eat their insufficient meal, Anakin looked at him. How soon before you can get Ricard back on his feet? Because she wasn't joking, Obi-Wan. She'll throw us to those droids, and then what? Ricard's very ill, said Obi-Wan, heading slantways across the square, away from the dining area, and back to the street. It might be days before he's well enough to think about us.
Obi-Wan, you heard her. We don't have days.
Obi-Wan shrugged. Anakin, we don't have days regardless of what Jacqueline decides. It was true. Though every mouthful was rationed, Torbell's food supplies were rapidly dwindling. The water pump had been damaged so badly not even he could repair it. The sick and wounded were barely holding their own. And they were burning through the stockpiled liquid damatite so fast, he almost didn't dare look at the capacity gauges. It's a miracle the villagers have remained this calm. But I don't think it'll be long before they start to panic. And when they do...
You think we should give up?
Not yet, said Obi-Wan after a moment.
Then what do you want to do?
For safety's sake, 2 battery-powered lights marked the street corner. Obi-Wan stopped, then lowered himself onto the front step of the nearest dark, empty building.
Let's just eat, shall we?
The food's marginally better when it's not stone cold. Which might be true, but it wasn't saying much. Nothing short of a miracle was going to make Jacqueline's dreadful eggs palatable. Anakin eyed the scrambled mess with acute dislike, then forked up a mouthful and swallowed it, gagging. You know, I'd almost be willing to give myself up right now if it meant never having to eat this ootlish again. Obi-Wan chuckled. Trust me, Anakin, you haven't suffered until you've eaten raw Gundark.
You never ate raw Gundark!
Are you calling me a liar?
Well, no, of course not, but
Obi-Wan, nobody eats raw Gundark.
Not twice, at any rate, said Obi-Wan, sardonic. And it wasn't by choice the first time, I promise you. He laughed outright, the memory easing the shadowed tension in his face. But then he started coughing. Even after drinking his water ration, it was a long time before he stopped. Anakin offered his own water, but the cup was waved away. Look, he said after a moment, you can't keep on like this, Obi-Wan. What you're doing, spending hours helping Devi at the power plant and then more hours in the sick house? Even with that little girl helping, it's killing you. I do what I must, said Obi-Wan, and forced down another mouthful of food. These people are sick, and I can help them, and that's the end of it. No, it isn't, he retorted. Obi-Wan, why are you... And then he realized. Stang. This isn't your fault, it's mine. I pushed to stay in Torbell. I made promises I couldn't keep. You have to stop punishing yourself for my decisions. Punishing myself, Obi-Wan muttered, looking away. What nonsense, Anakin. He put his almost emptied plate to one side on the step. Then what is going on? You're the one who's always telling me to slow down, be sensible, conserve my strength for the long haul in a mission. And look at you. Your hands are shaking, your pulse is racing. I'm not a healer, and I can feel your headache. Obi-Wan turned on him. Are you saying I should let these people die simply to spare myself some trifling discomfort? I am a Jedi. I have the power to help them, and so I must help them. I cannot, I will not, stand by and watch them suffer. I won't prove our critics right. Critics? Anakin said, baffled. What critics? What are you talking about? For a long time, Obi-Wan sat in silence. The boom, boom, blat of the droid's bombardment continued. Permanently tuned to the vagaries of the vulnerable shield, Anakin listened for a change in its subliminal hum, a sign that one or more of the generators was struggling. But no, his frantic patchwork repairs still held, and they would keep on holding. They had to. At last, Obi-Wan sighed and put down his plate. It's something Bail said once, on the way to Zagula. He was angry because I'd been so perfectly healed after that terrorist blast, when others who were injured languished in med centers, many of them maimed. He wanted to know why the Jedi healed themselves first and left others to linger. So this is Organa's fault? He said, incredulous. Obi-Wan, come on! Don't fall for that. He didn't even know you then. He didn't know anything about the Jedi. He still doesn't, not really. And now you're going to... Obi-Wan lightly slapped his knee. Peace, Anakin. He had a point. This war has taught me that we Jedi have allowed ourselves to become too detached, too distant from the Republic we're sworn to serve. Look at how suspicious these people of Torbell were of us, and still are. You've said it yourself, more than once. We've lost the common touch. Yeah, well, it can stay lost if it means you don't try to kill yourself healing people, he retorted. And I'm telling you, it has to stop tonight. Because we both know you can't take any more. Anakin, Obi-Wan shook his head. I will take as much as I need to take. I have to. If for no other reason than to get your ally Rickard back on his feet. There was the merest hint of acid in that remark. Anakin rubbed his hands over his face, feeling the thickened stubble, the dried sweat, the gritty dirt. With his eyes covered, the bombardment's boom, boom, blat sounded louder than ever. And even with them covered, he could still see the bright flashes of plasma impacting the shield. This is my doing. I've been wrong every step of the way, and now it's too late to make up for any of it. So, he said when he could trust his voice. I guess you were right after all. I guess I am dangerous. Dangerous? Said Obi-Wan blankly. What are you talking about? You don't remember? He shrugged. Well, it was a long time ago. Coruscant at night, awash with brilliant color. A landing platform crowded with the Queen of Naboo's starship, busy with staff and droids, humming with tension. Young and alone, he was missing his mother so badly, was so angry because the Jedi Council had smashed his dreams to dust.
His only hope was Qui-Gon, tall and strong and somehow elemental. A shield and a shelter, and a newfound friend. Not like Obi-Wan. He'd been young then, impatient, sharp-tongued, and just as angry, because Qui-Gon had said he wanted to train one small, strange boy.
The boy is dangerous. They all sense it. Why can't you?
Anakin shivered, remembering. And then the puzzlement in Obi-Wan's face faded, replaced with a dawning realization as he remembered too.
Oh, he said. Oh, Anakin.
There was shame in Obi-Wan's voice, regret, and shock to think his fleeting anger, his thoughtless words, could have left such an indelible impression. But they did, Master Kenobi. They really did. And now I can't help wondering, were you right after all?
Anakin, said Obi-Wan intently. Listen to me. I was wrong. In that moment, I was hurt. I was angry.
He swallowed.
Anakin, I was jealous.
Some part of him had always known that. Even as a child, abandoned to the care of an astromech droid on that landing platform, he'd felt those hot, roiling emotions in Qui-Gon's Quicksilver apprentice. Even when he'd been too young to understand everything, he'd always understood how other people were feeling. That was just another part of being a Jedi. The chosen one. The boy who grew up as something more than a boy. And now, years later, stranded on a planet staring death, or worse, in the face, that boy was a man, and the Quicksilver apprentice was the man's former master. His friend. His brother. His comrade in arms.
Strange times.
Anakin shook his head.
Forget it. I never should have brought it up.
But you did bring it up, said Obi-Wan.
Anakin, you are not dangerous, and you are not responsible for the trouble we're in now. If there's a finger to be pointed, let it be pointed at me. I'm older than you, I'm more experienced, and at any given moment I could have pulled the plug on this mission. But I didn't.
Anakin, you are not dangerous. It warmed him to hear the words, to hear the sincerity in Obi-Wan's tired voice, and see it in his tired face. But if he knew about Tatooine, and what really happened with my mother, about Padme, about how I feel sometimes when the Force turns scarlet and bursts through me like hot blood, if he knew all that, what would he say?
He didn't know. He never wanted to find out. Burying those thoughts before Obi-Wan could sense them, he cleared his throat.
So, why didn't you pull the plug?
Because I wanted you to be right, Obi-Wan said after a long silence. I wanted to give you the chance to prove me wrong for once.
He ran a hand down his face. We call you the Chosen One, but we don't often give you the chance to prove it, do we?
Yeah, well...
He had to clear his throat and blink hard to unblur his vision. I haven't exactly proven it this time.
Blat, blat, boom, blat, boom, boom, boom.
And the night sky beyond the fragile shield burned like a dying sun.
Oh, I don't know, said Obi-Wan very gently.
We're not dead yet, Anakin. And that means...
The Force's spurring was blunted, but they both felt it.
Something was wrong.
Something was...
There, said Obi-Wan, pointing across the square. His hand was unsteady.
What shield sector is that? 4? 5?
Anakin squinted through the shadows.
4. Stang! I thought I'd fixed it. I thought...
Never mind what you thought, said Obi-Wan, pushing to his feet.
Come on, there's not much time.
None of the villagers had noticed the tiny flutter in the shield that meant its particle beam was losing integrity. And Durd's droids hadn't noticed either. They were still merrily blasting away. But they would see it any moment now, and then they'd bring all their blaster fire to bear on that one vulnerable section. It didn't matter that running hurt, that they were gasping as much as breathing. Matching Obi-Wan stride for stride, Anakin heard his comlink crackle and dragged it out of his pocket.
Anakin, Generator 4, it's...
I know, Devi, he said, stumbling in the dark in the dirt, pounding the pitted ferrocrete as he and Obi-Wan raced down the road. We're on it. Nurse the power feed to that generator. Whatever you do, don't let it surge.
I'll try. Anakin, hurry. It'll go offline any minute.
Every footstep drove a spear of pain through his spine.
He felt his own pain. He felt Obi-Wan's. It couldn't matter. They had no hope of force sprinting. All they could do was run. So they ran, panting and desperate. Reaching the generator, they staggered to a halt and clutched at each other to stop themselves from falling. To save time in an emergency, every shield generator had its own hastily rigged toolkit. While Anakin wrenched open the shield's housing, Obi-Wan opened the kit and upended it onto the grass. Overhead, the faltering section of shield began to hum a discordant tune, loud enough for the nearest droids to hear it.
"Oh, Stang," Anakin said, the air rasping raw in his throat. "Stay back, you barbs. There's nothing to see here."
Too late. Programmed with their holo images, with orders to capture, not kill, the droids had seen their quarry and the sparking agitation in the shield. He stared at Obi-Wan, and Obi-Wan stared back.
"Master, do you trust me?"
Speechless, Obi-Wan nodded.
"Then do exactly what I tell you. When I tell you, no questions. On three. 1, 2, 3.
There was no time for explanations. There was barely time to breathe. Plunged into that other place where a machine was a living thing and it spoke to him in whispers, Anakin sank himself into the generator's mechanical heart and let it tell him what was wrong, what to do. Faster than thought, faster than feeling, fueled by the Force, he surrendered himself and became one with the machine. He felt his lips move, barking orders that Obi-Wan immediately obeyed. But he couldn't hear what he was saying. He couldn't see what he was doing. He was somebody, something else. A fusion of man and machine. On the other side of the faltering shield, Durd's droids were firing without pause. He could feel the blooming plasma like lava in his veins, scalding him and scorching him and melting his bones. It didn't matter. He wasn't flesh anymore, so he couldn't burn. A shower of sparks, a surge of power, a shuddering in the Force. And then the generator stopped flickering, and the storm shield firmed. Thwarted, Durd's droids lowered their blasters. Someone was sobbing. After a moment, Anakin realized, "Oh, that's me." And then his knees were buckling, and he was heading for the ground. Obi-Wan caught him.
"It's all right. I've got you."
He let Obi-Wan take his full weight because he was too tired not to. Everything hurt, even his stub of an arm. And then he cried out, and Obi-Wan cried out, because between labored heartbeats, they felt a fresh surge through the Force. There were Jedi high above them. Help had come at last. Chapter 17. Standing on Indomitable's bridge, Mace Windu spat a string of curses, not one in a language Ahsoka could recognize or understand. But that didn't matter. Their meaning was perfectly clear. And if she'd been alone or below decks with Rex and the others and could still see what she was seeing, well, I'd be cursing too. Lanteeb was blockaded, the entire planet belted by Separatist warships, and the buckle on that belt? General Grievous's massive cruiser. Admiral Yularen, hands clasped behind his back, frowned through his bridge's transparasteel viewport.
"Well, I certainly wasn't expecting that."
"No," said Master Windu, his voice very tight.
"Neither was I."
Yularen's stare slid sideways.
"They knew we were coming, which means..."
"I know what it means," said Master Windu.
"I need a priority scrambled channel back to the Jedi Temple." "Lieutenant Avery," said the Admiral over his shoulder, "you heard Master Windu."
"Coming right up, sir," she replied, tearing her gaze from the gut-punching sight of all those SEP warships just sitting there, waiting for them. Ahsoka looked around the bridge. This was such a fine crew. Not one of their faces betrayed an inappropriate emotion, but she could feel their frustration and their alarm shrill in the Force.
"And who can blame them? We've got 4 ships in this battle group, and we're looking at more than 25 against us."
She turned back to the viewport and tried to see past the blockade to the planet Grievous and his massive battle group were defending. Lanteeb. It was a nothing place. Drab and brown and devoid of interest. Well, almost devoid.
"I can feel him. I can. It's not my imagination."
Master Windu glanced down at her.
"Padawan..."
He made her nervous in a way no other Jedi did, not even Master Yoda. His presence in the Force was breathtaking. Standing beside him was like being buffeted by a gale, and he wasn't even trying. He was just breathing, just being himself. What it felt like to be near Mace Windu when he exerted himself? That was something she wasn't sure she ever wanted to experience.
Master.
Her mouth was dry. She swallowed, trying to calm her thudding heart.
He's down there. Master Skywalker, I can feel him. Not strongly, it's just a whisper. But he's there.
I know, said Master Windu, with his first blinding flash of fury controlled. He was quiet again, completely self-contained. They're both there, somewhere, and they're in trouble. Oh, she'd been hoping she had imagined that.
Master Windu, said Lieutenant Avery behind them, I have the Jedi Temple on priority scramble for you.
Thank you, said Master Windu and crossed to the communication console. Taking the patched-in comlink from her, he raised it to his lips and looked back at the blockade.
This is Mace Windu. Get me Master Yoda now.
As Master Windu explained the situation, Ahsoka closed her eyes and sank more deeply into the Force.
If she tried hard enough, maybe, just maybe, she could make contact with Sky Guy.
Mind touch over this kind of distance was practically unheard of. But she had felt his presence. That had to mean something. And they had a special connection, she and her master. So if she focused harder and tighter than she ever had before, if she imagined herself a laser and sent her mind searing through space toward him.
Master, Sky Guy, Anakin, I'm here.
She heard her heartbeat, thundering, felt sweat break on her brow. Her skin started to crawl with the effort of reaching him, and pain built to a crescendo behind her closed eyes.
Master, it's me, Ahsoka. Please let me know you're all right.
There was no answer, only that faintest of faint whispers, a teasing tickle that told her, yes, he's alive. Gasping, abruptly unsteady on her own two feet, she broke free of the Force. Master Windu was still talking to Yoda.
Right. Then unless we're directly engaged, we'll hold fire until I hear from you. But don't make us wait too long. And if they try to get past us with more of that bioweapon, then I won't hold back. Windu out.
Lieutenant Avery closed down the scrambled channel, then turned to Admiral Yularen.
Good news, sir. They tried to jam our signal four times, but our countermeasure upgrade stopped them.
Excellent, said Yularen, permitting himself a small, satisfied smile. Let Pioneer and Coruscant Sky know, but they'll keep on trying, so stay on your toes.
Master Windu turned.
I want ship to ship. I think a warning shot across Grievous's bow wouldn't go astray.
You're sure? Said the Admiral. Why not let him sweat a while? Push him into making the first move.
Right now we're outnumbered more than 5 starships to 1, said Master Windu.
I doubt he's sweating much, Admiral.
He showed his teeth in a fierce smile. But he might get a little uneasy once he realizes who he's up against. At the very least, I'll give him something to think about. And that'll buy us a little time.
For what? Yularen asked quietly. Do you really think Strategic Command's going to send us more ships? With 7 major battlefronts actively engaged and 11 cruisers still disabled with this comm virus?
Master Windu's expression was grim.
They might not want to, but they don't have a choice. Not if they want to avoid more Chandra-Las. Besides, that's Grievous standing in our way. Our highest priority is taking him out. Lantib's as good a place as any to get the job done.
Master Windu, far be it from me to dictate to a Jedi of your experience, but truly...
The Admiral stepped closer.
I think it would be best to hold our fire a while longer. Get him thinking, throw him off balance, if only a little bit. We can't make threats we're not in a position to carry out. I strongly suggest we wait until we know what kind of reinforcements we can expect. Any way you look at it, this is going to be one dirty, brutal fight. But I'd prefer to know exactly how dirty and brutal before I poke a stick in this Bezekian hornet's nest.
Master Windu thought for a moment, then nodded.
I'll split the difference with you, Admiral. 1 standard hour. Master Yoda will have an answer for us within that time. His eyes narrowed. And then we'll get down to a little stick poking.
Ahsoka stood a little straighter.
Master Windu?
Padawan?
I'd like to tell Captain Rex what's going on.
For a moment, she thought he'd deny her permission, but then he nodded.
Very well. You can brief the 500 first. Leave the other companies to me.
And after that, Master, I'd like to meditate.
His eyebrows lifted.
Meditate?
There was no fooling this man. Not that she'd even try, of course. Uncomfortably aware that Yularen and the other bridge officers were within earshot, she clasped her hands behind her back. Not defiant, never that, just determined.
Master, I know it's a long shot, but I want to see if I can reach Master Skywalker.
You're right, said Master Windu. That is a very long shot, Padawan. But I won't tell you not to try. Stranger things have happened, and we've got an hour to sit here with nothing better to do.
She did try to keep the excitement from her face and voice, but she wasn't sure she succeeded. Still, nothing in Master Windu's expressions suggested he was displeased.
Thank you, Master. Once I've spoken with Rex, I'll be in my quarters if you need me for anything.
He nodded, dismissing her, and she left the bridge to go below decks where Rex and the rest of the 501st were geared up and ready for a fight.
Don't worry, Anakin. We're here, and we're not going anywhere. Not until we've got you and Master Kenobi off that planet.
Locke Durd sat behind his office desk, bloated with a malignant satisfaction. On the desk sat a compact holo-imager, running a selection of holonet news reports on the aftermath of Chandra-La. With wet, shining eyes, he watched the unspeakable images, the uproar in the Senate, the Supreme Chancellor's pleas for patience and courage. Every now and then he chortled and bounced a little in his chair.
You see, Doctor? You see? I was right, he gloated. With one small blow, I have struck terror into the rotten heart of the Republic. One more blow, and I'll have it on its knees. Yet again, I prove myself indispensable to Count Dooku. Single-handedly, I will win this war for him, and he will shower me with riches the likes of which have never been seen.
Staring at the flickering holo recording, Bantina couldn't tell if her heart was beating or if the dry office air moved in and out of her lungs. She felt disconnected from the world around her, inhuman, as though someone had transformed her from woman to droid.
I did this. Look at all the people I killed.
Master Kenobi was right. She'd put the lives of her family, her friends, before everything. Before her conscience and her ethics. Before the oath she'd sworn as a scientist. Now thousands of lives were destroyed as a result, and the Republic teetered on the brink of chaos.
I did this. It's my fault. I'm sorry, General, she said, abruptly standing. I require the fresher. Might I be excused?
He barely glanced up from enjoying the horror show she'd helped him create.
Be quick. We have things to discuss. I want to refine the weapon's formula. There won't be time to use the new mix on Bespin, but...
His office tip-tilted around her.
Bespin? You're attacking Bespin next?
He chortled again, so pleased with himself.
Within the next few days, as soon as the Republic starts to relax... Ingenious, aren't I? The Republic's scrambling to protect the rest of the core worlds. It's the perfect opportunity to disrupt the Tebana gas market. When Count Dooku sees how much I've hurt the Republic, my position will be unassailable.
Pleasure vanishing, he scowled.
No more doubting my judgment. No more questioning my expertise.
Bantina's belly heaved.
I'm sorry. Please excuse me.
Don't be long, Durd snapped. KD-77, go with her.
Forced to keep pace with his hated personal droid, which daily tormented her with holo images of her family, she barely made it to the refresher before her stomach turned itself inside out. On her knees and running with sweat, she emptied herself of food and bile, then slumped shivering to the cold, tiled floor. At least she only had KD-77 as a witness. Durd had dispensed with her battle droid escort. He'd needed the machines to send after the Jedi. In fact, he'd stripped the compound of battle droids. But it hadn't done him any good. Wherever Anakin and Master Kenobi were now, somehow they were managing to hold Durd's forces at bay. She'd heard the Nymoidian screaming at Colonel Berev, demanding to know why the Jedi were still at large. Berev had said something about not alerting the wrong people to the fact there was a siege, that they couldn't ship in more droids and heavier weapons for fear of awkward questions being asked. He'd told Durd to be patient, promising that the village couldn't hold out much longer. But she refused to believe it. If anyone could beat Durd, it was Anakin and Master Kenobi. For one moment, she thought the withdrawal of the compound's battle droid contingent might give her a chance to escape this new compound. But no. Durd fitted her with a slave collar. The blasted thing was the wrong size. Her neck was chafed, her skin rubbed bloody over her collarbones. Durd didn't care. He had more important things to worry about, like orchestrating another mass murder. The filthy device was plugged into her spinal cord. If she crossed the compound's boundary or tried to take the collar off, it would drop her to the ground paralyzed. He'd demonstrated that once, and she'd been left drooling for 2 hours. To make things worse, it also had a punishment component. If she said the wrong thing, if she was too slow or didn't grovel enough or displeased Durd in any way, he pressed a remote device and the collar surged pain through her body. Not enough to cripple her, she was still too useful. But it made her weep, and he enjoyed that. Denying him pleasure was the only act of rebellion she had left. Durd's droid buzzed a warning.
Time's up.
Feeling faint, Bantina struggled to her feet. With her face washed and her mouth rinsed, hollow and despairing, she returned to Durd's office. The Nymoidian had dispensed with the news footage from Chandra-La and was now gazing raptly at a hollow image of the bioweapon's molecular structure. A fresh wave of nausea struck her as she stared at its elegant, lethal simplicity. It was her greatest work, her finest achievement, and the only thing she hated more than her creation was herself for creating it. I was wrong. I should have let them all die, even my mother. How many mothers are dead now because of me? Durd glanced at her.
Well, Doctor, don't just stand there. Sit down.
She sat mechanically as the droid retreated to its customary place in the corner.
We know from Chandra-La, Durd said, tapping the hollow imager, that the weapon's dispersal rate is too slow. Its gaseous form is too heavy. Now that won't matter on Bespin because it's a sealed environment. But it is important for our next outdoor target. So, Doctor, we need to reduce the weapon's weight so that even the slightest breeze can...
Interrupted by a comm signal, he cursed and answered it.
What, Barev? I'm busy!
Though it was only a voice comm, Barev's alarm was unmistakable.
The Republic sent cruisers to break Grievous's blockade. Lanteeb's under siege, Durd.
Lock Durd leapt to his feet.
What? What? How is that possible?
Your missing Jedi must have called to the Republic for help.
How could they, you idiot? They're in the middle of nowhere!
Durd slammed his fist to the desk.
Barev, this is your doing. That psychic seeker of yours. I told you we should have kept it here under guard until this war was over. But no, you insisted we let it leave. That Drevox talked, sold us out to the Republic for more money. You never should have...
Don't blame this on me, you fat fool. This disaster is entirely your doing.
Fat fool? Fat fool?
Gasping, Durd thumped his fist to the desk.
How dare you?
No, General, how dare you?
Enough! Durd shouted. This disaster you've created must be dealt with at once. My entire bioweapon strategy hangs in the balance. Where are you?
Where do you think? In the spaceport security complex.
Then stay there. I want to see this blockade for myself. I want to speak with General Grievous. I must make him understand his duty to protect me. Stay there, Barev. I'm coming to you now.
With enormous effort, Bantina kept her face blank. If Durd so much as caught a hint of the elation coursing through her, he'd lose himself to fury and kill her on the spot. Spittled with rage, he turned on her.
You're as much to blame as Barev for this calamity. When the emergency's over and those Republic ships are scrap metal in the sky, I am going to punish you, Doctor. I am going to kill those nephews of yours.
Snatching up the caller's remote, he stabbed at its control button. Bantina cried out and fell from her chair to the floor, flailing and grunting.
You want to save the puling little bloodsacks?
Dird demanded, and then threw the remote onto his desk.
Then get back to your lab and find me a way to improve the weapon's dispersal rate. Do it in the next hour, and I might spare their lives.
She'd bitten her tongue, head spinning with pain, her mouth full of iron and salt. She dragged herself to her feet.
Yes, General.
Dird thrashed his way out from behind his desk, flung open his office door, then seized her arm and shoved her into the deserted corridor beyond.
What are you waiting for? Go! KD-77, with me!
Unsteady, she started down the corridor, listening to him rampage away in the opposite direction, toward the compound's main entrance. The droid clanked along behind him. Her body still hummed with pain, and fresh blood trickled from the raw wounds on her collarbone. Everything inside her was chaos.
The Republic's here. That means the Jedi are here. So if I can stall Dird, maybe I can buy us all some time.
Except there's Bespin. They need to know it's the next target. Think, woman, think!
There's got to be a way to let them know.
Stopping, she looked back down the corridor. It was still empty. And Dird, in his anger, the Nymoidian had left his office door wide open, which meant his comm console was free for the using. The careless Barv never bothered to secure it.
Oh, but I can't. I can't. If I'm caught, he'll kill everyone I love.
Moaning, she turned her face to the corridor wall. Behind her closed eyes, she saw Samsam's limp body plummeting out of the sky, imagined her nephews murdered. And then, she straightened.
Vernon, you're a fool. He'll probably kill them anyway, and if he doesn't kill them, he'll kill thousands of other children, thousands more children. Master Kenobi was right, and you cannot make the same mistake twice.
Trembling, she returned to Dird's office. His unsecured comm console had three separate comm link channels, each one with enough power to punch all the way through to the Republic. She wasn't a communications expert, but a lifetime of fieldwork had made her handy enough. She set the unit to auto-signal wipe non-recording mode, engaged its scrambler, and coded in her mother's private comlink frequency.
Come on, Mother, answer me. Whatever you're doing, sleeping or eating or bathing or shopping, stop it and answer me. For once in my life, I want to hear the sound of your voice.
Nothing. She felt sick again.
Mata Fernan?
Bantina collapsed across Dird's desk, bones and muscle turned to water.
Mother? Mother, it's me.
Benti? Benti, the goddess be praised!
Oh, it was her mother. Not dead, but rescued. Her mother, a woman she loved, but sometimes found so hard to like. Garrulous and querulous and overdramatic, never satisfied, always pushing.
Mother, listen, she said, trying to keep her voice steady. Is it true the Jedi saved you?
Yes, Benti.
She felt a rush of shamed relief. I should have had more faith.
Mother, be quiet and record me. I don't have time to say this twice.
All right,
her mother said. She sounded weak with shock, too.
I'm recording.
Tell the Jedi that Bespin is the next target. Tell them Anakin and Obi-Wan are still alive and need their help. Tell them the weapon is at the coordinates I'm calling from. They have to destroy the compound. Mother, I'm...
Benti, everyone's safe,
her mother said, close to shouting.
The Jedi rescued all of us. Well, except for Samsam. I'm so sorry. Benti, are you there? Benti?
And now she was neither woman nor droid, but a vast, aching emptiness, a universe of nothing.
They're safe. So those hollow images Dird's droid shows me, they're not true. It's all a lie. I've been controlled by a lie. Anakin, forgive me. Mother, I have to go, she said faintly. Tell everyone I'm sorry, and I love them. Mother, I love you.
Benti,
Benty.
She disconnected the comlink. Took a moment, just a moment, to press her hands flat to her face and hold back the dreadful wail of grief building in her throat. And then, when she could trust herself, she double-checked Dird's comm unit, making sure there was no trace of her outbound comm.
They're safe. They're all safe. And that means I'm free.
The corridor outside Dird's office remained empty. She looked both ways once more, then ran for her lab as though a droid army was chasing her.
Bespin?
Said Palpatine, his hollow image gently shimmering. He was on his private yacht, on his way to Chandra-La in an effort to shore up plunging core world morale.
Master Yoda, are you sure?
Seated in his council chamber chair, Yoda nodded.
Quite sure I am, Supreme Chancellor. Impeccable is the source of this intelligence.
I see,
said Palpatine, then clasped his hands on his desk.
Then I'm afraid I have no choice but to disappoint you, Master Yoda, Senators. Any ships we have to spare must be sent to Bespin, not Lanteeb. A disruption to the Tabana gas supply would be utterly catastrophic for the Republic.
Standing to one side, Bail Organa exchanged a worried glance with Padme.
Supreme Chancellor, I'm sorry, but I can't agree. From what we've been able to ascertain so far from the Chandra-La investigation, if Bespin is the next target for a bioweapon attack, then not even Republic cruisers will be able to stop it. A team of agents and bioweapon experts will prove far more effective than...
By all means, Senator, send in your people. We must take every step possible to prevent a second attack. But I also want a battle group deployed to that region.
Supreme Chancellor, please.
Padme began, but fell silent as Palpatine unclasped his hands and raised them sharply.
Enough! Must I remind you all how badly destabilized the Republic is at the moment? Because of your failure to prevent the tragedy on Chandra-La. Failure! Confidence in this administration has never been so low. And thanks to your secretive and high-handed handling of the situation, my confidence in you has been sorely tested. So I beg you, do not disappoint me further by arguing against my decision.
Bail bowed.
Of course not, Supreme Chancellor. We'll inform Fleet of your request, and I'll dispatch our best teams as well. We'll do everything in our power to protect Bespin, although, he hesitated, it might be in the community's best interests if we order an evacuation.
And send a signal to the Republic and the Separatists that we are unable to keep our citizens safe? I hardly think so, Senator Organa.
I agree, said Padme. We need to reassure people, not alarm them. But Supreme Chancellor, what about Lanteeb? It has to be wrested from Separatist control. Not only is it the source of this bioweapon, but the Jedi to whom you and I owe so much remain trapped there. We can't abandon them.
My dear Senator, they are not abandoned,
Palpatine retorted.
Indeed, with Master Windu's unauthorized addition to Admiral Yularen's battle group, their welfare has been rated more important than the entire Bothan and Kothless spynet operation. If that's not an indication of my regard for them, I'm not sure how I could go about convincing you.
Yoda caught Padme's eye and lifted a cautioning hand. She nodded and stepped back.
Supreme Chancellor, he said, accept your decision in this matter, we do. Intend to usurp your authority. We do not.
Really?
Palpatine frowned.
I must say, Master Yoda, you and your fellow counselors have an odd way of showing it.
He didn't need the Force to show him the depth of Palpatine's displeasure, but it couldn't be helped. Mace Windu was right. No politician could be allowed to interfere with the Order's ability to protect its own people. Not even in wartime.
Supreme Chancellor, said Bail. There may be another way to support the Lanteeb battle group, one that doesn't involve compromising Bespin. Will you trust me to explore it?
Sighing, Palpatine lowered his gaze to his desk.
Bail, Bail, Bail.
He looked up again.
Yes, of course I'll trust you. That bioweapon must be eliminated, and of course I want Anakin and Master Kenobi rescued. I fear dreadfully for their safety. On that score, you have my unwavering support.
But no more Star Cruisers, Bail muttered once the Hololink was severed.
I can't fathom his reasoning.
Surely a swift resolution to the standoff at Lantibe is in everyone's best interests.
Don't be so hard on him, Bail, said Padme. Every government in the Republic is looking to him for solace, waiting for him to promise that their planet won't be the next Chandra-La. It's our job to support him, not criticize and second-guess him.
Watching the two friends glare at each other, Yoda cleared his throat.
Senators, mistaken am I that news for me you have? Something to do with Lantibe, I think.
Sorry, Master Yoda, said Bail. Yes, Padme and I have come up with a plan we think could work.
He listened in silence as the two senators explained their idea of forming an emergency civilian fleet to augment the Republic's Lantibe battle group.
The only problem, said Padme, frowning, is that while we've got in-principle support from several governments and corporations, nobody's willing to commit even one ship. They're all terrified of provoking a reprisal bioweapon attack on their own planets and people.
From what Master Windu has reported, Bail added, it's clear we can't break Grievous's blockade without more ships. And we can't get more ships without being able to promise those who send them that they'll be safe.
Can you help, Master Yoda? Said Padme. Bail says Dr. Netzel can't find the missing link to create a workable antidote, and that means there'll be no civilian aid for the battle group. And with the Supreme Chancellor so adamantly against redeploying any more Republic cruisers, her breath caught. I don't see how we're going to get Anakin and Obi-Wan off that planet, or stop Dird and Dooku from launching any more attacks. Can you think of a way to break our deadlock?
Yoda stroked his chin. It was interesting that she placed the safety of her Jedi friends before the welfare of the entire Republic. It wasn't what he expected from her. When it came to Obi-Wan and young Skywalker, it was clear that Senator Amidala's emotions remained very much engaged.
A pity, that is. Pain only can it cause her. Solve Dr. Netzel's dilemma, I cannot, he said slowly. Promise these civilian interests that safe it is to help you, I cannot. But an answer to Lantibe? Possess that, I might. Senator Organa, your assistance would I need.
Bail nodded. It's yours. Though he was weary and burdened with grave doubts, Yoda permitted himself a small smile.
But discreet we must be, Senator. If to succeed, my plan is, its secrecy paramount must be. Access do you have to a captured Separatist ship?
I do, actually, Bail said, surprised. An undercover operation near Kessel just netted us one of the SEP's older Techno-Union ships. It's battered, but flyable, and equipped with full SEP security passcodes.
What do you have in mind, Master Yoda? Said Padme. Can you tell us?
Sliding out of his chair, he began to pace the council chamber. The rapping of his gimmer stick was loud in the silence.
Agree that, with only four cruisers, break Grievous's blockade. Master Windu and his troops cannot. But slide through it, one small ship could, if Grievous believes an ally it is.
You want to send another Jedi to Lantibe? Said Bail. Master Yoda, forgive my skepticism, but...
Changed the circumstances have, said Yoda, silencing him with a look. Thanks to Dr. Fernan, know the location of the bioweapon facility we do. Possible it is now to infiltrate and destroy Dird's compound,
I'm sorry, said Padme. If we know where the facility is, then why aren't we launching a full-scale assault? Surely that was always the idea. I know it would mean civilian casualties, which we're trying to avoid. But if we don't destroy this weapon, we'll have more civilian casualties than the Republic's seen in 1,000 years. We should go back to Palpatine, tell him this, and...
An assault, the plan was, when the element of surprise we had, Yoda said. That advantage we have lost, Senator.
He's right, Padme, said Bail, turning to her. In the time it would take the battle group to get past Grievous, you can bet Dird would shift his location. Maybe even escape Lantibe entirely with enough stockpiled bioweapon to slaughter half the Republic. Our best hope now is a stealth job.
Anakin and Obi-Wan were meant to be a stealth job, and look how well that turned out, she retorted. Master Yoda, are you seriously suggesting we should trust this Bantina Fernan? She's already betrayed us once. What makes you think she won't betray us again?
Her concern was reasonable, but...